All right, hey guys, and welcome to episode 23 of Glory Seekers. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent.
It's a little colder here, but I'm okay.
Baby.
No, it's good. I like it.
So
yesterday was my birthday. I'm officially an old man.
You're an old man.
Shut up. I'm still the oldest one on the podcast. Go away.
Cran turned 14 yesterday, so happy birthday to Cran.
Soon to battle with AJ Kerrigan for top teen on Star City Games.
Please. I think I've got that locked up.
Yeah, you're like, AJ is much better than you.
Alright, so this past weekend we had an SCG Open, and we also had the Pro Tour, but who cares about that, right?
There was a Pro Tour this weekend?
Yeah, didn't even realize.
Whoops.
So, let's start with the most important thing that happened, the SCG Open.
Okay, sure.
So, in Standard, we saw Brad's Red-Green Monster deck actually win the Standard Open in a field full of aggressive decks. Mm-hmm. I am looking through this top 16,
there is a lot of aggro.
What? How did the mid-range deck win then? I don't understand. I'm putting my hands on the sides of my head for dramatic effect, listeners.
Well, no one can see you, and thank God.
Hey.
It's probably for the best.
Hey. Yeah, it's probably for the best.
My beard is magnificent right now, and you will respect it.
So we definitely saw a lot of aggro decks litter the top eight. There's 2, 4, 5 in the top eight, and the other three decks are 2 mid-range and a control deck.
Basic Theory wins out again. Good job, SCG players. We are happy that you're helping continue these trends in the way that we build and understand the game.
Yep. So it's actually really interesting to see a deck like Green Red Monsters win and do really well. Yeah. But we also saw very similar lists, perhaps even better lists, come across the field at the Pro Tour.
Yep.
So you're saying that the people who played at the Pro Tour had better lists than the people in the Star City?
I am. In fact, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
But the Pro Tour came they out. Had a lot... the deck that Zach Stern played actually had some very similar ideas. He's actually playing a Nykthos Shrine to Nyx in his deck. He's also playing a Rurik Thar as well as an Ember Swallower. So in addition to something like Xenagos, being able to use Nykthos to activate a very early Ember Swallower or activate Polychronos or play an earlier Rurik Thar actually seems very powerful, especially against the aggro decks and especially against some of the control decks.
Oh, yeah. I really don't like that this deck isn't playing Big Garruk. I say Big Garruk. There's only one Garruk now. I'm sad that this deck is not playing Garruk, and I think that's a big mistake. I think that's probably the best 6-drop that you can possibly ramp into in green right now, because it fetches you all of your ridiculously undercosted fat beaters right out of your deck.
Right. I think part of the thing is Zach, I believe, was, and it really looks like this based on his board. I mean, based on his board, it actually looks like he was pretty prepared for all the control decks. He was playing Pithy Needle and Mistcutter Hydra and Burning Earth, well as Chandra. But he was also prepared. He also had 3 Anger of the Gods to prepare for, and 3 Mizzium Mortars in the main, just for all the aggressive decks.
Sure.
He also had Ratchet Bomb, which is kind of like a dual threat. It's able to attack control and aggro decks pretty efficiently, especially since he only has 4 one drops in the deck.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is definitely a deck where Anger of the Gods can work, and I like that. People have been trying it in other mid range decks, and it's just not good. But here, I think you can make it okay, since you only have like 4 creatures that die to it. I think Mihara's deck from the Pro Tour, it's a little worse than that deck, since you're also running Burning Tree Emissaries for the Devotion. But in general, I think Burning Tree Emissary and the Devotion package is better overall, because Nylia, God of the Hunt, is insane in that deck.
Yeah, I actually like Mahara's deck is actually very impressive. If you guys haven't seen it yet, it's very good. It's very, very high on Nykthos. He's playing four Nykthos, but he's also playing a lot of cards to turn it on. And he actually is playing four Garruk.
He's playing four Nykthos and four Voyaging Satyr to untap it.
Yep. So good.
This deck is all effing.
You got what, 12 ramp creatures, right?
You got
four Mystic, four Satyrs, four Cryptid.
Four Burning Tree.
Burning Tree's not a ramp card. I guess
it can be. With Nykthos, it can be. Welcome.
Yeah.
All right, you want to hear a nut draw? A nut draw is one drop, untap. Burning Tree, Nykthos, five drop. That's a nut draw.
It's pretty good. Brian Kibler was walking around because he died pretty early, and he actually snapped a picture of Mihara playing, and turn four, his board was... had too much stuff on it. He had a lot of stuff going on. He had a Garruk, he had a Domri, he had a Polychronos, he had several Burning Tree Emissaries, some Mystics, some Sylvan Caridids, and a Scavenging Ooze.
Yeah,
and this was like turn three or four.
Yeah, that's like the insane part about this deck with Garruk. Like with the super ramp version with the Nykthoses, when you activate Garruk, your opponent is just, like, they're just dead. Like, you activate Garruk and plus him, and you draw three creatures, you have the mana to cast all three creatures. It doesn't matter what they are. You're just going to put them all on the table and be like, there's no such thing as overextension with Garruk. Hooray!
What I also like about Mihara's deck is he built it so he actually had things to do with his mana. I mean, besides Garruk being a very high-costed card and obviously something to do with your mana...
Yeah, it keeps Handfilled up.
Right. He also played three Arbor Colossus, two Nylea, and a Polychronos. So between those three cards, he was able to use any excess mana to actually mana sink into a lot of his guys, being able to use Nylea's ability several times or Monstra Senior Arbor Colossus or Monstra Sing Polychronos seems very powerful.
Yeah.
He definitely built his deck to be able to use any leftover mana, any excess mana.
And I think that's an important thing that you have to do when you're thinking about building a Nykthos deck, because I think this card's design space is, the waters have just been, have hardly been explored, we'll say. This card's got a lot of potential to it still. And so if you're building your own Nykthos deck, or if you're altering a Nykthos deck, you have to keep in mind that to get it on full cylinders, you need to have a lot of permanents in play.
Mm-hmm.
And when a lot of permanents are in play, it means that those permanents are not in your hand. So once you get it to full power, you need a way to refill your hand or some sort of way to use that mana. So you need mana sinks in your deck.
Yep.
For Mihara, he had the Garrucks. Rudy, you were playing a blue-white Nykthos deck this weekend.
Sure.
You had Sphinx's Revelation to keep
going.
Right.
Like, one of the things I actually like about Nykthos is that you're able to actually... You have to build your deck in a certain way to be able to effectively use your mana. And, like, looking at a lot of the stuff in Top 8, a lot of the mono-blue decks that we saw actually didn't have any Nykthos Sun.
Right.
I think the only person who actually had a Nykthos was Sam Black.
Right. And that's partially because they didn't have any way to keep their stuff going.
Sure.
The
only thing they really had to use with all of that mana in the Star City deck...
Right.
Was Thassa.
Ember Swallower, Stormbreath Dragon. I mean, he had Ember Swallower, Mortars, Stormbreath Dragon, Polychronos.
Oh, yeah.
Which is all stuff to mana sink into, but he also couldn't really take advantage of Nykthos as well as Mihara did. I mean, these are two very different decks. They're doing similar things, but they're very different decks. And while Zach Sturm's deck, his Green-Red Monsters deck, is very mid-rangey and has a lot of really strong creatures that you can play in the mid-game or you can play late-game, and they're relatively powerful, and he also has some things to put his mana sink into, while Mihara is trying to play out his entire hand and half of his deck by turn four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are definitely
decks that had Nykthos in it.
What about the mono red devotion deck? The one that
Merlinson's deck?
Right, which is very similar to the deck that Channel Fireball played.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
it had four Nykthos in it. Ways that it could keep going as far as mana sinks were
Ember Swallower, Stormbreath Dragon,
Stormbreath
Dragon,
and Monstrosity, Purphoros.
Yeah,
they had over and over and over again.
His big thing was dumping it all into Purphoros.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could also use your Hammer of Purphoros in addition to casting a spell.
Sure.
You don't need all those extra mountains anymore once you have a Nykthos going, so you can just turn them into creatures. By the way, I think Hammer of Purphoros is awesome, and I'm pretty excited to see it being played.
For sure.
The card reminds me of Fires of Yavimaya, and obviously that card was awesome. So.
I think one of the more interesting decks that we're actually going to see a lot of moving forward is Kentaro Yamamoto's mono black deck, which is something that is very, very interesting when you think about it, because every time a set comes out, everybody jokes, oh, this is the time mono black's going to be good. Mono black's going to be good, guys.
I hear very much of that this time, but it might be better than it ever has been since Odyssey.
Yeah. I think by far we can all agree the best card in his deck is Pack Rat. Pack Rat's. I actually like Pack Rat. Part of the reason that Pack Rat's really good in this deck is because he's playing Erebos and Grey Merchant, and Pack Rat actually contributes to your devotion.
Yeah, every extra copy of Pack Rat, it copies the card Pack Rat, which has the attribute of a casting cost of black colorless. So all the tokens have casting costs, so they contribute to your devotion.
So it's pretty good. I think Pack Rat's a very, very good card with Grey Merchant.
Underworld Connections is insane.
Yeah. Being able to carve out right is very good. So this past weekend...
How happy is the guy that bought 100 Pack Rats so that he could use them as Pack Rat tokens in his, casual deck? How happy is that guy right now?
Probably not that happy.
Yeah, I don't think Pack Rats...
It isn't rare for that much. The last set, there's going to be plenty of them. Everybody's got them because of Limited.
Especially since there's only two.
And there, it is deck. Only two of them. Yeah. They're really bad at
that card's real good.
Yeah, the card also seems like it has diminishing returns.
I don't know.
So I think one of the things I actually really like about the mono black deck is this weekend, myself and Cran and I went to the Raleigh Classic, and I played a Blue White Master of Waves deck, which we'll get to in a little while. We'll talk about it when we do the deck breakdown, because we're breaking down a very similar deck.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd Anderson went, and he actually played a mono black deck very similar to Kantara's deck. So one of the things that I actually had a lot of trouble with was him curving out and playing a 2-drop into Underworld Connections, into Desecration Demon, into Grey Merchant. And even if I could deal with them because I was playing stuff like the Tension Sphere or Rapid Hybridization, regardless of having those cards or having Dissolve, just Grey Merchant by itself, fouring you, was just very, very difficult to deal with. And he's also playing a lot of removal, the decks are playing Heroes Downfall, Doomblade, Devour Flesh, all of which are very, very good already and keep you on the back foot, but then Grey Merchant to kind of really helps put you away. I think that's one of the best cards by far in the mono black deck.
Yeah.
All right. So as far as standard goes, we also have the mono blue deck. I really like the mono blue deck. It's obviously very interesting. But I think we're going to definitely see more of that in the future. We'll talk about that a little bit. But one of the other decks that I really want to talk about is the Chapin Rietzel Orzhov deck.
Yeah, I really like that deck too. I'm going to play one of two decks at the Invitational and Standard. It's either Mahara's deck or this black-white deck. I think they're both amazing.
Yeah. So one of the things that I definitely like about this deck is this deck by far respects the curve so much. There's you chain up the curve very easily. All of your cards actually help you. You can actually fall into a chain very easily by setting up a good, decent curve. And the fact that you have Soldier of the Pantheon, it seems very, very good if a lot of people are going to be playing stuff like Burning Tree Emissary and Frostburn Weird.
Yeah.
Right.
Soldier definitely has a lot of potential, and the fact that it just has protection from multicolor and the fact that it gains you life is something that you can use just to kind of protect yourself from a lot of the Burning Tree Emissary decks, because they play so many cards that are green-red. So you get to gain a bunch of life, which is obviously very good. But the other thing I really like about this deck is you can have a very aggressive start between Soldier, Priest, and Captain and Desecration Demon. But you also have an ability to play a long game with Obsidat and Heroes Downfall and Read the Bones and Whip and Elspeth.
Any deck where I can play aggressive and then switching to a second gear is a deck that I'm really interested in, especially one that has disruption for my opponent.
It looks like a Naya deck, for sure.
Yeah, it really does. And that's what I like about it the most. I think this may well be the best mid-range deck in Standard.
It's like, definitely possible. One thing of note is that they are playing four Orzhov Guildgates for 12 black duels, or black-white duels, which is interesting.
Yeah, they have 8 sources that come into play tapped, but I think that it's probably just like something that you have to deal with. You probably have to play Orzhov Guildgate just because you have...
probably better than more basic lands?
Yeah, well, because Precinct Captain is white-white, and then Desecration Demon is black-black, and then Obsidad is black-black-white-white. So I think you might need it just to be able to cast all of your spells.
Having 8 come into play tapped lands is a thing, though.
I mean, that's
you're running 26 lands, so...
Right, you're playing 26 lands, plus you're playing Thoughtseize. Yeah, all the
probably compensated by adding an extra land.
Right, removal, Precinct Captain, you know, so you have, like, you can have an early start to kind of protect yourself to make yourself go to the late game, too.
Right. I don't know, I think I like the Junk deck better than that JVL and BBD played. They're kind of similar in what they're trying to do, and I think... I don't know. I really like Reaper of the Wilds as a card. I think it's a great card.
Yeah, I mean, Reaper of the Wilds is definitely very good. I am curious as to what their matchup was against the Mono Blue deck. I know JVL played against the Orzhov midrange deck in the final round. He played against Chapin, and I know he lost a match to it. I'm not sure how
one match. I don't.
No. I'm not sure how close it was, but I'm interested to hear how the matchup went. Is they feel like very similar decks. So, but the only thing is he is playing Soldier, and he is playing Reaper of the Wilds and Voice of Resurgence, and Soldier has protection from both of those cards, which seems like it could be very important.
Sure. And both decks have Blood Baron, although this one only has one main one side in this deck, and then, Tube in the side and the
JVL's deck. Yeah. Sure.
Blood Baron is just disgusting right now. Ugh, that card is so good.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with Blood Baron right now is I do think if people are playing red, there's just an infinite number of Mizzium Mortars running around. I think
but you've got a lot more threats than just Blood Baron.
Sure.
Like, Mizzium Mortars is all well and good for a Blood Baron, but then they drop a Desecration Demon, and you're like, oh, well...
Crap. Or an Obsidat. And you're like, oh, so this Mizzium Mortars is good? No.
Yep.
All right. You have a bunch of very powerful, aggressively costed giant fatties that require different types of removal to be able to beat. Opponents are always going to be left guessing on which removal they're supposed to be playing.
Yep.
So, and they're not always going to have it.
So basically we're seeing a lot of change in Standard, and I know myself and Cranderson are going this weekend to GP Louisville.
Yeah.
I know Cran was going for a while, but I wasn't going, but after talking to CVM and Cran about it a little more, I decided that it might just be better to go. I'm also fairly certain I have 2 buys. I have to double check on that, but if I do have 2 buys, not going to a GP 6 hours away seems potentially a waste.
Yeah.
So, and plus, I actually really like the format right now. I think it has a very wide variety, and you have a lot of cool things you can do, and people are finally figuring out, like, certain cool things that you can do with Nykthos. So it's, like, definitely really, really fun that you get to do a bunch of stuff with it. One of my favorite plays with Nykthos is playing a Nykthos, or having a Nykthos in play, tapping it to add a bunch of mana, playing another Nykthos, getting rid of your first one, and then tapping it for even more mana.
We like that is cradling your Nykthos.
Cradling your Nykthos.
That's a thing. but why don't we take a look at what happened in Legacy? Oh, wait. Nothing happened in Legacy. Nothing has changed so far in Legacy. People are... I mean, there's definitely a bunch of combo decks.
I see Oops All Spells.
And there's an Oops All Spells deck in the finals.
Yeah. WTF. How did this happen? How did you let this happen? Everyone that was playing in... Where was it at? Columbus?
It was Milwaukee,
I'm ashamed of you.
Yeah, I mean, it had to have, obviously, some good matchups on the way to Top 8.
Right.
And if you don't have good matchups on the way to Top 8, you're probably not going to make it.
Who did he play in the Top 4, Dredge?
He played Dredge in the Top 4.
He's not going to lose his Dredge.
And then he played...
I think he played Tragos in the Top 8.
He did play Tragos. Yeah,
not going to lose his Tendrils.
Yeah, it's just like, you're just slightly faster. I think you're actually the same speed as Actually, I think you're faster
you're
than 10
turn one
duels.
And a half deck without
yeah.
spells.
So the only way that Tragos really had an option to beat him was like Ataxian Probe, Cabal Therapy, Therapy you, and just like hope you don't draw anything. Mm-hmm.
Props to Tragos, by the way. Peter Tragos top aided two open or three opens back-to-back-to-back, right?
I think
yeah, he top aided both opens this weekend, and he also top aided the last Legacy Open.
He did right? not top
no.
eight.
Oh, did
standard.
He top 16 standard?
No.
Yeah,
yeah he did.
Model,
he did.
Yeah, he top 16 yeah. standard open, and he's top eight of the last two standard opens.
Last
two
legacy
opens. Two legacy opens, but two different decks also.
Sure.
He's played four color cascade last week, and this week he's playing another Ozium Tendril. So
yep.
Looks like he's on a roll. Good job with him.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, yeah, it is pretty good, but like we're not really seeing too much of a change.
Oh yeah. Also, my friend Eddie top aided with blue, white, red Delver, and he whiteboarded all of his cards.
Yes.
He whiteboarded all of his cards in his Legacy deck.
That is fantastic.
Awesome. Looks awesome.
He also did it through his standard deck too. You guys actually might have seen him playing blue, white control and playing whiteboarded Azorius Charms.
Wow.
It's fantastic.
So.
He's going places.
So the thing, though, that we are seeing this week that we didn't really see last week is there are a lot more Delver decks. Last week there was only like two or three Delver decks between
right.
top 16 and top 8. I mean, yes, Delver won it all last week, but he was like the only Delver deck in the top 8. And this week we
Ryan
have...
Ryan over Turf always plays Red Delver.
Right, sure, but there were two Delver decks in the top 8, and there were another 3, 4, 5, 6 in the top 16.
Jeez.
Okay. So, Delver is definitely...
It's a regional thing, I think.
I mean, it's definitely a regional thing, but it's also something to pay attention to. There are a lot of combo decks, and depending on the meta, but sometimes a lot of times Delver decks can prey on a lot of the slower combo decks.
They usually can.
So, I mean, especially since a lot of these decks are playing Force of Will and Daze, and potentially Spell Pierce too,
mm-hmm.
or Discard... I know all the black decks are playing either Cabal Therapy or Thoughtseize, and then all of the blue and all of the non-black decks are just playing Spell Pierce, Daze, and Force of Will. So I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing to see. Is last week there were a bunch of combo decks, this week there were a bunch of Delver decks. Potentially next week at the Invitational. I mean, the Invitational kind of changes the metagame a lot because people there are more likely to play sometimes fairer decks. I actually, for this upcoming Invitational, I actually expect to see a lot of combo in the Invitational. I actually feel like a lot of people are going to be playing combo decks.
Possibly.
And
it is an Invitational, after
yeah,
all.
Yeah, everybody that I've talked to so far, and a lot of people that I talk to that I really respect them as a player, but I also respect them as a person... A lot of them are talking about playing something like Sneak and
yeah,
Show.
I've heard a lot of people saying they want to play Sneak and Show.
So, I mean, which is weird because, like, I know people who've never played the deck before who are like, I think I'm going to play Sneak and Show for the Invitational. And it's like different sets of people who don't talk to each other, and
right.
all of them are coming to the conclusion that they should be playing Sneak and Show for the Invitational. I don't want to name any names because if you play, you know, I don't want to, like, give away anything. But, like, it's just very interesting to see this dynamic of a lot of people who normally are playing a lot of fair decks, playing things like Stoneforge Mystic or playing things like slightly unfair like Delver are considering playing Show and Tell.
Mm-hmm.
I also think Sneak and Show, obviously, I'm not sure exactly how the Sneak and Show matchup is versus Omni Show, but I feel like Sneak and Show might be the better deck for a more open metagame.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't play enough with the two decks to really know... like the different matchups.
Sneak and Show, the Sneak and Show Omnitel match is not. It's
I'm
not
talking
match.
About the head up. We're not talking about the match.
Okay.
We're talking about their matches
okay.
against the field.
Right.
Okay,
and I
sure.
feel like Sneak and Show probably has a better matchup against some different decks in the field. I think Sneak and Show might be better against some of the blue decks because you have access to Red Elemental Blast.
Sure.
And Omni Show might be better against. You know, just a lot of different decks because it has a lot of redundancy to it.
Right.
So I'm not actually sure what the matchups are. I'm really wish I did. Really wish I played Sneak and Show more. Really wish I played Omni Show more. I'll definitely going to be talking to Ross Merriam soon to find out why he likes Sneak and Show much and why he likes it versus Omnitel. Because I know he's played it a lot recently. He's actually been playing it since Providence. Yeah, since the Swedes and the Danes were in the U.S. and Michael Bondé won the Standard Open in Providence, that was the first time I think that Ross started playing Sneak and Show, and he hasn't stopped since.
Sure, it's a good deck.
So that's a pretty long time so far to be playing it and sticking with the deck, and especially something as volatile as Legacy, and especially a player like Ross who tends to play several different decks and play them fairly efficiently. So it's very interesting to see him just be like, no, I'm just going to be playing Sneak and Show. Because, like, I tried to talk to him, and he's like, nope, Sneak and Show. I'm just like, all right. It's pretty interesting. All right, so why don't we get into our deck breakdown, which this week we're actually going to talk about the Mono Blue Devotion deck. And the reason I kind of took so long to not talk about it is because of that.
Yeah.
So what makes this Mono Blue deck so good? And I think the answer is very clearly Fossa and Master of Waves.
Yeah, those cards are just...
I think those cards were incredibly underrated, even by this cast.
I completely missed Master of Waves as a...
Yeah, we missed Master of Waves altogether, yeah. But we also declared for Standard that Fossa was one of the worst gods for Standard.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I have the recording.
That sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah, it's just like we all, as a whole, as a group, we all decided that Fossa was probably going to be the worst god in Standard.
I thought that Erebos was the worst, actually. But I thought Fossa was the fourth.
Yeah. We all rated Fossa very low, but why is Fossa so good? I mean, obviously in this deck, it's like a devotion deck, so you can very easily make Fossa a 5-5, but why? But Fossa can't just be good as just a 5-5 that you have to play a bunch of creatures, especially ones like Cloudfin Raptor and Judge's Familiar. There's no way that those cards are like reasonable enough to play in Fossa. There has to be more to Fossa than just those cards.
Well, obviously, it's the Scry one that makes her so good.
You get to look at
two cards a turn, that's just incredibly powerful in a deck, just any deck, really. Just being able to look at an extra card a turn. You don't get flooded that way, and you get as much lands as you need until you don't need any lands, and then you stop getting lands. Yep. I thought that gods were going to be incredibly difficult to turn on, and it turns out I was wrong about that. You have to build your deck with the fact that you want to turn this card on in mind, but it's not difficult at all to pull that off, mm-hmm. as evidenced by
all the devotion decks.
Success that devotion that gods and devotion have had.
I mean, we had Purphoros, Nylia, Fossa, and Erebos.
Yeah, a little
all in the top eight.
Yeah.
The only one we didn't see was Heliod.
Right.
Which is very, very interesting. Because we all rated Heliod.
Good. I still think he's good. I think there's still a lot of potential with him. Especially considering you have Boros Reckoner as a white creature, you have Precinct Captain as a white creature, you have Detention Sphere and Chained to the Rocks as white enchantments. Like, I think there's definitely a lot more design, potential there.
Sure.
But we'll leave that for another day.
Sure.
Right now we're talking about Fossa.
So I think part of the reason that makes this deck so good is this deck is pretty aggressive.
Yeah, it's an aggro deck.
This deck is an aggro deck, and one of the things that is very good in aggro deck is evasion,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that you can make all your creatures unblockable with Fossa. So like the fact that you're playing 12 flyers, and besides those 12 flyers, you're playing four Fossa,
mm-hmm.
and Fossa being able to give a lot of your guys unblockable seems incredibly good. And I was playing a different version of the deck, but obviously I was still playing Fossa, and just the fact that I could make some guys unblockable in a lot of the mirror, against all the green decks,
mm-hmm.
just like felt incredible. Just like make my guy unblockable, attack. Like Elspeth +1, okay, make my guys unblockable, attack.
Yep.
Just puts your opponent so far behind, it makes their blocks bad, because that means you force them to block what you want them to block instead of what they want to block. And the fact that you can just get in for like a few damage a turn here and there and be able to nickel and dime them out can also be very good.
Right. I will like to mention this deck is built quite aggressively, but I think that the shell is very, very powerful and it doesn't necessarily have to be built this aggressively. Kenny Caster and Chris Van Meter both played Mono Blue decks on Saturday at the Classic, and both did a pretty good job. Their decks were a little bit slower. Instead of Things like Cloudfin Raptor and Judge's Familiar. They were playing cards like Jace, Architect of Thoughts, in mass, instead of just like the one of that Sam had. Claustrophobia.
Or the two that Jeremy had.
Right. It was more Nykthosis, I think. Let's see.
Yeah, they played
CBM
four
was
Nykthos,
playing
actually.
Opportunities. To refill on his hand. He said they were really good. Let's see.
Let's actually talk about one of the big differences between their decks.
Sure.
Is that Dasani played a Biden of Thassa, and so did a lot of the other mono blue decks.
Mm-hmm.
CVM and Kenny decided to cut the Biden.
Yeah, since they weren't playing one drop blue creatures like Judge's Familiar and Cloudfin Raptor, they don't need Biden of Thassa really. It's not as important. So just instead of that, more Jaces.
Yeah. I think Jace is definitely a good way to take it. I actually, one of the things that I like the most about the Mono Blue Devotion decks is that they're playing Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah,
if you're playing Nykthos, it's very easy to hit 7 mana.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not playing Nykthos, if the game, like, you can still use it for 2. I mean, the only thing that I do like that Jeremy was doing that none of the other people were doing is that he was playing a Disperse. And Disperse seems very good, very relevant.
Fine.
You can save your master waves.
Yeah.
Which seems very good, but you can also, you can decide saving your own guys, you can also disperse permanents that you just didn't draw Cyclonic Rift for, which seems really interesting, and also being able to disperse Master Waves in the mirror, or Cyclonic Rift into Master Waves seems pretty sweet.
It's just a really flexible card
to
counter spell.
Yeah. Right. I actually like Disperse a lot, and I actually think that's going to be a card moving forward that the Mono Blue decks are going to find a lot of success in. One of the other things that I liked about Jeremy's deck is he had Aetherling on the board. Now, I don't really like Aetherling, but being able to switch to a blue pseudo-control deck against decks that can't handle Aetherling seems like it could be kind of important. Now, I'm, again, not too big of a fan of Aetherling. I don't think it actually does enough or is very impactful, especially when you're playing, you know, fairly aggressive cards and you're playing Thassa. But I don't think it's as impactful, but it definitely, as in last standard, both Return to Ravnica and the standard that we all knew and loved. Well, I loved it. No one else did.
I loved last standard. Last standard was insane.
Aetherling has a lot of potential, and it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you just play Aetherling in any against any control mirror, and they're just dead.
I'm actually a little surprised that he doesn't have some number of Nykthos in his sideboard, because it looks like he would almost be switchboarding into a more mid-range version of the deck, adding more Jaces up to 4, a couple of Aetherlings, a few counter spells in there, and some Wall of Frosts just to slow the game down. He's going to be... Wall of Frosts is pretty cool. I think Claustrophobia is better, though.
Wall of Frosts?
I agree.
Yeah. Wall of Frost can be attacked through Claustrophobia. It's just a straight-up removal spell. I don't know. Like, he'd be cutting all the small cards, and then, like, having something like Nykthos seems like it would be really good. You can also just rush out an Aetherling if you're playing Nykthos, too. Just, like, turn 5, put an Aetherling into play with a mana up. Your opponent has to deal with that. Let's see if you can handle it.
Hey, you definitely also have games where you can just play it on turn 4, too. Like, if you ever play, like, Raptor into Weird or Tidebinder Mage into Night Veil Spectre, you just have 6 mana and you could hold one up. So you could actually play it as early as turn 4, too.
Yep.
I think Nykthos is very good in these kind of decks because it allows you to play out a lot of your hand, which obviously is very good, but I think one of the most important things in this deck is the fact that you can sometimes just turn on Thassa, and you want to be able to turn it on as much as possible, especially against a lot of the non-control decks, and being able to have Nykthos in your deck to power out a bunch of guys and then just play Thassa, or like being able to play Thassa and the next turn playing Nykthos, activating it, playing a bunch of guys, giving your guys unblockable and attacking with Thassa. Like, Nykthos allows you to do a lot of things that you normally wouldn't be able to do, and being able to generate a lot of mana, especially when you have as much devotion as you have in your deck, I think is very important.
Sure.
So, one of the ways this deck is obviously very good is because it can be very aggressive, but it can also take a more mid-range role. Biden of Thassa allows you to draw extra cards. Jace is obviously very good against all the mid-range decks, and against the control decks. Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot, you can get a lot of use out of it there. And being able to
Tidebinder
Mage seems so good against all the green and the red decks, which a lot of people are playing.
And a lot of people are going to be playing more red. And even if you're not, it's a Grizzly Bear and it adds two devotion.
It's actually even awesome in the mirror.
Sure, yeah, because it taps down
Frostburn Weird. Just like play it, tap your Frostburn Weird. So that's kind of cool. I actually really like the mono blue deck. I think it has a lot of power, and I think it has a lot of potential, and it is going to be a staple.
Oh yeah, certainly in the front runner of the format going forward.
For sure.
If you are going to have to know how to beat mono blue, if
absolutely.
Are planning on playing in a standard tournament going on.
Yep.
Or moving on.
Yep, and I think that one of the ways you can do that is Supreme Verdict and Nashiok.
Okay.
Although I don't know if you want to be playing those two cards together.
Why not?
I mean, you can.
Esper
you can.
From what I've heard so far, Esper Control is quite good against Mono Blue. I played Esper Control in the Classic last weekend, but I never got to play against Mono Blue, so I don't really know how the matchup goes firsthand, but I've been told that it's very good for Esper.
Okay. That's completely.
I mean, you have point removal for the Masters that all hits it. You have Detention Spheres for Thassa and Jace, and you have Wraths. Like, yeah, I don't see what's bad about that match.
Outside of your mana is that Ashiok takes
Thassa.
Yeah.
I actually pointed that out to CVM when he was considering changing from mono blue to blue black the night before. And one of the things that I said is like, yeah, how sweet is it that you can just like plus two them and then get Ashiok and then get Thassa? And he's like, I didn't even realize you could do that. And his face lit up because it's just like such an awesome thing to think about. It's just like, even if you're playing like a control deck, just like having Thassa just seems absurd.
You get to scry every
just
time.
Get to scry every
for
turn.
No other reason being able to scry every turn.
And the fact that you're playing Detention Spheres 2 and Ashiok means
you'll
probably
turn
it on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No problem. Probably turn it on. I mean, it might not be easy, but you definitely turn it on.
Right.
So actually, like speaking of like Detention Sphere and like Verdict being good against this deck, I saw in Jerry T's article a couple weeks ago before he went to the PT, he showed a deck that won States. I'm not sure where it won, but it was a blue-white Master Waves deck. Now, I didn't like his build, but I liked the idea of playing white with Master of Waves. Getting to play cards like Azorius Charm seems really good against a lot of the aggressive and mid-range decks, especially since you can play Master, make four guys, attack with your four guys, and gain 8 life. Or even playing against mono red, swinging in and just gaining 10 life just seems absurd.
These are the facts.
Yep. One of the other things I liked is I got to play Revelation, which is obviously very good against all the mid-range decks and all the control decks. It gives you a way to refill your hand because you're not playing Bident. But I was also playing two Nykthos, and I got to power out a lot of like heavy Revelations, which I just got to draw a bunch of cards and keep up Dissolve. Which was awesome, really awesome in the control mirror. Also, Nykthos allowing you to like keep up Dissolve seems like very, very good.
Sure.
But I really liked my deck because I got to play Azorius Charm and I got to play Rev. But the most important part was I got to play Detention Sphere. And Detention Sphere seems so good right now. Seems good against all the aggressive decks, all the mid-range decks, and the control decks. Just like you always have a target, except for Stormbreath Dragon. But you almost always have a target, and your targets are almost always relevant. And I played against a green deck, and he went turn one Elvish Mystic, turn two Mystic Mystic, attack you for one. I went draw, desphere your Mystics,
yep,
and just like set him back. And it's just like absurd. I just like Tidebinder Mage the first one, and then he played two more, and then I was like, all right, desphere. And he's just like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Neener.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's definitely pretty sweet. I think white gives you options. Black also gives you options because you can play Thoughtseize, Doomblade, Far and Away, Devour Flesh, Ashiok. I think potentially splashing other colors might be worth it, but I'm not 100% sure. I think it definitely gives you other options, and I think if you want to have a way to beat the mirror, then I think splashing is probably your best way to go, especially if you're playing in a meta that has just infinite amounts of mono blue. All right, so let's move on, and let's talk about our Magic Classroom. So our Magic Classroom this week is actually going to be something kind of interesting. It's something that we've talked and touched on before, but I think it's definitely something that is very relevant this week.
Sure.
And that is about assessing results.
Okay.
Now, we recently had a Pro Tour, and it might come as a surprise to you, but a lot of people are going to be playing the decks from the Pro Tour.
Almost exclusively.
This is obviously something that is going to happen. People get very excited, especially when new decks come out. Mm-hmm. And since it is the Pro Tour and a lot of people are watching, it is highly publicized.
Right.
Plus, let's just look. I'm going to look right now, and I'm going to count the number of deck techs we have from the Pro Tour.
Nine.
Yeah, we have nine deck techs. Nine different decks. And all of them. One,
these are
two,
draft.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
Oh, okay.
The only one that's a draft. I didn't count the draft. The same black one. But there were a lot of different decks, and we have green-white aggro, green-red midrange, Esper control, mono-red devotion, mono-blue, green-white hexproof, Mahara's Gruul deck, demons and dragons, and junk midrange.
Yeah.
And demons and dragons.
It's red-black control.
It's just red-black control. It is the deck that Jerry's been playing, very similar to it. Sure. I can't imagine the deck is that far off from what he was playing.
He only has eight creatures in the entire deck. It's just Hellkites.
Hellkites.
Yeah.
Hellkites is Desecration Demon.
Yeah.
It's actually seven.
Okay, seven. Yeah, even less.
Yeah, and he actually has three in the board.
Sure. Yeah. Some Chandras and a bunch of removal.
So, I guess technically he has more if he's playing Rakdos Key Rune. Is he?
No.
Ooh, he's not playing Rakdos Key Rune. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Deck looks okay.
Yeah,
deck
looks fine, but the fact is you have just nine choices just to look at, and only one of those nine top aided. So.
There's also top. There's the top eight decks for deck lists, and then there's also everybody who went, what, six?
18 or more points, they had at least six wins. Mm-hmm. So they had six out of 10 wins, so they went 6-4.
Six and four.
Yeah, so you have a ton of deck lists in there, and there's some pretty good decks in there, too.
Yeah, here's a blue-white-red deck, which only way to win is Elspeth and Jace.
I wouldn't put that.
I am just saying.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Oh, but just like you have a lot of different ones. Here's another mono-black deck playing Thrill Kill Assassin. Here's a mono-red deck. There's Sam Black's deck, obviously. He top-8ed, but here's a green-black deck. Which is obviously very interesting. I mean, Boonsayer,
Barrels.
The old Life
Bane Zombie Colonian Tuskers special.
Yeah. Get there, man.
Boonsayer, Desecration Demon.
Yeah, man. He went at least 6-4.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So, yeah, there's some okay decks in there, but there's probably, like, if you recognize the name and the deck looked pretty good, it's probably pretty good. So, like, there's a lot of hidden.
Ooh, this guy's pretty good. He played four Golgari Goat Gates, one Mutavault, four Ogre Tombs, seven Swamps, and seven Swamps. I'm assuming that's a mess up, and it's supposed to be seven fours, but there's a lot of actually green black decks, which is very interesting to me. And here's BBD's junk deck.
Yeah.
But, like, this is just the point, is just, like, there are a lot of stuff to look at. And there are a lot of decks for you to check out. There's a lot of green-white aggro, too. Here's a Jund deck. So that's really interesting, and I actually think Jund's pretty good. Definitely has potential.
The deck gets to play Reaper of the Wild.
Yeah, which seems pretty good. Here's a Naya deck. There's a couple Naya decks. So, like, the fact is how do we like, assess all these different decks? Like, obviously, you can't tell what's good and, I mean, you can have an idea of what's good based on what won and what top 8 did.
Right.
But there's also a lot of variance.
What people are going to be playing.
Right.
Did well. Like,
there's also a
lot of
specifics.
You're not going to see too much of, like, the green-black deck, for example, at least at first. For all we know, that green-black deck might be, like, one of the players in the new format, but it's going to take some time for the world to realize that because it didn't place at the top. It wasn't around. Like, even something like mono-black or maybe Waffle Tapa's Esper Control deck or something. Like, these are decks that did very well. They made the top eight of the Pro Tour, but people aren't really talking about them right now, so they might fly under the radar for the first couple of weeks.
Sure. I mean, definitely Esper Control is one of those things. I mean, the fact that somebody like Waffle Tapa made top eight with a control deck.
You notice people aren't really talking about that
anymore? Yeah, and people aren't. I mean, which is really interesting, because when you consider his deck list only had one Detention Sphere and three Revelations and zero Far and Away.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously very, very different from a lot of the control decks we've come to expect, for sure. I'm also going to check now, because there was something else that I thought was really interesting. There's no Aatrox in his deck.
Yeah.
Which
zero,
is also
zero Aatrox in that Esper Control deck, the top eight of the Pro Tour.
Yeah. Which is obviously something very, very interesting. And his kill conditions are Aetherling, Elspeth, and Jace. So it's just very, very interesting to see the different kind of Esper decks that are floating around. But one of the things that you have to be able to understand is see the differences in them, understand what's works, what's good in one, and why one might be better than the other. What are some of the valuable parts of Waffle Tapa's deck, and what are some of the valuable parts of somebody like Christian Caucano? Like, what was good about his deck? What was good about Waffle Tapa's deck? You have to be able to read into their decks and understand what makes them good, and don't dismiss one or the other. I think just because Caucano didn't top eight doesn't mean that his deck is bad. And just because Waffle Tapa top eighted doesn't mean that his version is what people are going to be playing. Waffle Tapa has
That actually is what people are going to be playing.
Sure. I mean, but like, people might not understand some of the things that are good or why it was good.
Nobody pilots a Waffle deck like Waffle, so.
Yeah, right.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, is a lot of people are going to play his deck, go, I don't understand how this deck is good, I don't understand how he top eighted, and brush it off aside and just go, I'll just play Calcano's deck.
Sure.
But, like, you kind of get what I'm saying?
Sort of.
So one of the things that I'm trying to say, and if you guys obviously don't understand, obviously feel free to tweet, message us, email us, you know, hit us up on the Glory Seekers Facebook page, is people will try a deck out or look at a deck and decide that they don't understand exactly how it works or exactly why it's good and brush it off very quickly. One of the things that I will point out is Caucano and Waffle Tapa had a very similar mana base, but I believe Caucano actually had 27 lands.
Correct, you did.
Where Waffle Tapa only had 26.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what
Waffle
that...
Waffle also had more...
removal, temples. More temples. He did...
And Caucano ran 9 basics instead of 6.
Yeah. So we definitely have two different variations of it, and I definitely am a fan of testing out both versions and figuring out what makes a deck work instead of dismissing a deck just because you might not understand why one deck is good in certain situations or why one deck is actually good instead of just brushing it off. I think that's definitely a mistake that I've made in the past. Is playing a deck or looking at a deck and not understanding why somebody would be playing this card over X card. Like, for me personally, I don't understand why Waffle Tapa is not playing Far and Away. I mean, I can get ideas.
I can understand why he's not playing Far and Away. It was one of the weakest removal spells I played when I played Caucano's deck last weekend.
Sure. I mean, but you don't get that information unless you do things like playtest.
Sure. I am surprised that he has zero Aatrox anywhere in his 75, because that card was a house for me. So, that's something that's interesting. Like, he's playing Divination instead of Aatrox for more or less.
Right. He's also playing three Dissolves, where I think Caucano is playing 2 Dissolve and Syncopate.
Right, but that's just semantics. They both do
this. Right.
He's playing the same number of counterspells, though.
Right. He's playing just more Doomblades, more Heroes Downfalls, and 2 Thoughtseizes in the main.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's definitely one of the things to like look out for, is like there are going to be different flavors of control. I think littered in the top like X decks, I definitely saw some blue white red decks. I definitely saw some Esper decks. But one of the other things is some of the green black decks I was looking at looked very control-ish. They didn't look like they were trying to be very aggressive. They looked like they were trying to take a very mid-range to control aspect of it. They looked like they were trying to play a longer game. So it definitely is something to keep your eye on, is the different variations and the different flavors of what people are playing. But I think one of the most important things is when we look at the top eight, we have to understand that those are probably the decks that people are going to naturally find their way to first.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the people are always going to try out what succeeded first. Like, nobody's – some people are going to look at that list of all the, like, you know, six and four decks and say, oh, my God, this, you know, this deck with four losses was great. It looks fantastic. Some people will, but not many. Most people are going to look at the top eight and say, I like that color combination, or that looks like a sweet game plan. Let's do that.
So here's what I would do. If I had as much time as possible to just play test all the time for any upcoming tournament, I would build all the top eight decks and battle them against each other. That gives you a good idea of what the deck's weaknesses are for the most part, why the decks are losing, and what is happening for them to lose, where they have like bad matchups, that kind of a thing. And those are the decks that you need to beat. And now you know what you need to be able to beat, and you need, and you know how you can beat them. So those are the building blocks, I would say, that you are going to need to be able to either A, build your own deck for a large tournament coming forward, or selecting a deck that has the attributes that you want it to be able to accomplish those things, you know, be able to exploit the weaknesses of these top decks going forward. So obviously, though, not everyone has enough time to test a bunch of different decks against each other in the top eight. So, but yeah, if you do, that's what I would do at first. If not, I would say learn the mono blue deck, learn the Haras deck, and learn black white. I think those are probably the three biggest, three biggest new decks, I would say, going forward. There's still going to be plenty of mono red, a good amount of Esper control, good amount of Borzov going forward. But those are the three decks that I would say are most important to learn.
Borzov?
Yeah, Borzov. Yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah, most important, though, Mihara and Mono Blue.
Yeah. I can definitely get behind those.
And then Black White a little bit less important, but yeah.
All right, guys, I think that kind of wraps it up for us today. I want to say thank you guys for listening and tuning in every week. We really appreciate you guys doing that.
Tell your friends. Yeah. We need more people to listen to us because we are incredibly narcissistic and need attention.
That's true.
Pay attention.
So tell your friends. Feel free to share us. Obviously, please retweet us whenever we have an episode. Always feel free to share it on your Facebook page. We really love it when you do that. Also, remember, we have a contest. We have a contest.
Is that contest over?
No, the contest is not over. But they have until Indy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, so they got a week.
Yeah, they have a week to do it. You guys have a week to do it. Dan's going to put it up on Twitter and the Facebook page to remind everyone.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan. So our contest is we want to hear what your favorite 2-2 vanilla creature is. Now, if you guys don't understand what a 2-2 vanilla creature is, it is a 2-2 with no abilities. Doesn't do anything. It has flavor text, maybe. So let us know what your favorite is. It can be any color. Just remember, no abilities. We want it to be preferably one colorless and then a colored mana. But
it probably can't be red.
What? No?
Because I can't think of any red creatures.
There are not many. I think there's a dwarf.
Are there?
I think there's a dwarf or two that's a bear.
Yep. I don't think so. Well, I know there's some goblins that can't block. There's one in the saga.
Yep. So just let us know what your favorite is. Either tweet at us, email at us, or hit us up on Facebook. We've already gotten a couple submissions, so thank you for that. And we will definitely be letting you guys know who the winner is on our Facebook page. We will be signing four copies of that card, whatever your favorite card is, because we will all be at the Indianapolis Invitational, and we will be mailing it out to you shortly thereafter.
Wait, that's the best prize that we've come up with so far?
I mean, that's...
I'd rather have premium, personally.
Well, we'll also send you premium with your...
Sure.
Because Cran wants to give away premium. So there's that. All right, so if you guys want to get at us on Twitter, we are at GIORY Seekers.
Dan is at Cap and Top Deck. Cran is at underscore Cranderson underscore. I am at It's So Bizarre. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/GloryseekersPodcast. And you can email us to at gloryseekerscast@gmail.com if you want to. We'd be more than happy. If you guys have any questions, anything at all, you guys want to talk to us about anything, you want to ask us about a deck, you want to see if your deck idea is good.
Rudy will make biscuits and give one to you.
You will actually get Rudy biscuits.
Rudy biscuits. He'll make them in my mom's kitchen. Because my parents live in Indy and we'll be staying with them.
Yeah. I'll
not be making anybody biscuits.
We'll see what we can do.
You'll get a signed picture of Rudy biscuits.
Biscuits in limbo.
A picture of a biscuit signed by Rudy.
That's probably more likely to happen. But that means the person has to be at the Indy Invitational, which means if they win, they're going to have to, like, book a last-minute flight if they're not, like, already going.
We'll just mail them some biscuits.
Not mail them biscuits.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Again, hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Gmail. Feel free to let us know what you're thinking, what your thoughts are on the cast. If you guys need help with any decks, if you guys have any questions about our classroom, or even if you guys want to just drop by just to say, we're awesome. We love that. Please tell us over and over again how awesome we are. We can't get enough.
Yeah, I really like it when you tell everybody how awesome Dan is.
Yeah, also,
and that's it.
Also, that person who said thank you, Dan and Cranderson, and left me out, you are
he
a jerk.
He does so much work.
I mean, I'm only the host of the cast, so thanks
so
for that.
Much work.
I mean, you're only the guy that doesn't mention your own podcast when you make Top 8 and get interviewed, so I think it was actually justified.
I'm so sorry. All right, guys, I have to win another Open so I can redeem myself. All right, gonna work hard to win the Invitational or the GP then, so I can say, guys, Glory Seekers Podcast.
Yeah.
What about your match? Don't care.
That's right.
Oh man.
All right, guys, thank you very much for listening, and we will see here. Oh, by the way, if you guys are in GP Louisville, come say hi to me and Cran.
Yeah,
do that.
We love it when you guys come and say hi to us. Nobody apparently says hi to Cran, though. No one knows who you are.
Nobody likes me. Nobody knows who I am. I'm okay with that, though. I'll live with it.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening, and we will
talk to your faces next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye, guys.